Welcome to the PEW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and also PWTorch.com since 1999, the PW Torch app, and also host of this, the PW Torch Livecast at PWTorchLivecast.com. We are coming to you on Thursday, November 26, 2015. It is Thanksgiving in the United States, a holiday unlike the Philadelphia Eagles earlier today. We are not taking the day off. Sorry, Eagles fans. We are here presenting you with a special, as we often do on Thanksgiving, a special edition of the PW Torch Livecast. Normally it is Interview Thursday with a live guest. Today we present, well, they were live at the time. He was live at the time, Paul Heyman. A live interview with Paul Heyman from April of 1992 that I conducted on my pro wrestling live radio talk show called Pro Wrestling Focus on KFAN. This was the first live over-the-air interview I ever did with Paul Heyman, who then was known as Paul E. Dangerously, primarily. And I'm excited to bring this to our livecast listeners, all of you out there, for the first time. This is a fascinating discussion. It's Paul Heyman when he wasn't, as you know him today, well, he was a lot like he is today, but also a lot different. Young, brash, anti-authority. Oh, wait, that's still him today. Well, anyway, it's a younger version of the Paul Heyman we all know today. And I think you'll love this interview. This is part of around 100 episodes of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show from the early 1990s that are available as soon as you go VIP. And I'm going to mention it here at the top of the show. We have our VIP sale going on, Black Friday special. It's a Black Friday special, and you can sign up this entire weekend for it. It's $9 off a $10 subscription. That's 90% off. Go to BestBuy.com and try to find 90% off anything. You're not going to find it, although they got some good deals there. Go to Amazon.com. Actually, don't. Go to PWTorch.com/Amazon and try to find a better deal than this. 90% off a one-month subscription. You can try out the Torch VIP service. If you were a former member, we would love to have you back. We have so many new things to offer you, including new shows, including The Fix with Todd Martin, The Way Back Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley. By the way, that show was a great way to watch old shows but learn about them as you watch them. Every week, Jim and Pat comment in real time on a wrestling show from a pay-per-view, Clash of Champions, all kinds of things. And you got a taste of it yesterday on the livecast, on a special episode of the livecast. There's a new episode of that every week that comes with a VIP membership. That's new in 2015, as is The Fix with Todd Martin, which is a weekly show running 1 to 2 hours, covering current events, book reviews, some MMA talk at the end by one of the most respected MMA analysts out there, Todd Martin. But we talk vast majority of the time about pro wrestling. And that is new this year. Also, our new mobile website, PWTorchVIP.com, gives you ad-free access to all of our new VIP content every single day, including in-browser mobile streaming on both Android and iPhone. Plus compatibility with our new RSS feeds broken down, this is also new this year, broken down by show and by theme. All the retro nostalgia shows in one RSS feed, all the new current event shows in another feed, or you can subscribe individually to each show or only the shows that you listen to. We also have a master feed that covers everything we put up, whatever format works best for you, and it works on so many popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android, and we have a tip sheet to walk you step-by-step through the apps we recommend and how to sign up. So it is a stress-free process for those of you who are not as tech-savvy as maybe you'd like to be. So we really take you into consideration. All you have to do to sign up is go to pwtorch.com/govip. pwtorch.com/govip. That sign-up page is new, by the way. So if you've been to that page before and browsed, you can check out our new sales pitch page that orients you towards what a VIP membership entails. Some people get confused. The live cast is free. It remains free. We've been on the air close to 6 years, 5 days a week, sometimes six if we do a post-Sunday night pay-per-view live show as we did Sunday night and also Monday night after Raw. The VIP content is different in that we give you every live cast available on the RSS feed, but we take out the ads and the plugs, such as this one. Also, with a VIP membership, you get a grand total of around 100 VIP audio shows per month. And this includes not only the every single day Wade Keller Hotline, the weekly Bruce Mitchell audio show, Moonlighting with Greg Parks covering Impact and SmackDown and ROH and NXT and a wide array of shows outside of Raw that sometimes fall off the radar of the major coverage here on the livecast. So many other shows. You can get a full rundown of all the shows when you go to pwtorch.com/govip. There's something there that I think will catch your interest. In fact, there's probably a lot of things that will catch your interest that comes with a VIP membership. Audio is just one slice of it. You also get access to 1,400-plus back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter with my cover stories, in-depth reports on the biggest stories in pro wrestling over the past 25-plus years, going on 28. Well, I've been doing it 28 years, and most of those newsletters are online as soon as you sign up. Plus, a new newsletter every week with exclusive content, my Raw report, my pay-per-view reports, our staff roundtable reviews from the voices you know here on the live cast, and also exclusive columns. Bruce Mitchell and Greg Parks every week, Pat McNeil with special columns, Todd Martin with special columns every week. I write an editorial, so much more. That newsletter comes in PDF and text format, compatible and accessible, ad-free on your desktop or laptop computer, and now also on your mobile devices. So much comes with a VIP membership, and you can try it all for $1 for a full month. You can also, by the way, apply that $9 discount to a three-month or one-year sub. If you just want to sign up for a longer term than 1 month, we'll give you the same $9 discount. But again, that amounts to 90% off the first month. pwtorch.com/govip. The coupon code to use when you get to the bottom of the form is LiveCastSale. That's LiveCastSale. If you enter that, you will get the $9 off your VIP online order. It is it's a gimme. It's $1. And when you get signed up using the RSS feeds or just streaming it right from our ad-free, brand-new website that just debuted last month, if you're a former member, you're going to want to check out the new website. I get praised every single day by email and Twitter. People love this new website, and it's easy to find stuff, and it is it's just clean and crisp, and as Steve Jobs would say, it's gorgeous. Hope you'll take a minute out, sign up. It's quick and easy, and check us out for a full month, and we'd hope to earn your business long term. And before you go to the Paul Heyman interview, just a reminder, when you're shopping this holiday season, don't go to Amazon.com. Well, shop at Amazon, but go there via pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a link for US, UK, and Canada. Shoppers, click on that. It takes you right to the Amazon shopping homepage. Same products, same prices, same selection, but we get a cut of everything that you buy. So some of the profit that would go to Amazon goes to us. Think of it as like the tip jar at the coffee shop. Throw a couple quarters, couple bucks in that tip jar. When you're shopping Amazon this holiday season, think of us, think of this show, and it's your way to say thanks to us. And we really appreciate it. Year-round, we hit refresh on that every day, and it's always exciting to see when LiveCast listeners do take a moment out to start their shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon. Again, there's a link there. You click it, and it lands you right on the normal page you'd go to if you went to Amazon's website. Same prices, same products, but they know in exchange for us mentioning them on this show, they give us a kickback. So make sure we get that kickback by going to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Don't type AMAZ. Stop there. It's pwtorch.com/Amazon. All right, let's now go to this Paul Heyman interview. I think you're going to love this one. Listen closely for his comments on a future megastar who will rule this industry one day, named Steve Austin. Yes, Paul Heyman predicted that in 1992. Here we go.
Welcome to Pro Wrestling Focus. I'm your host, Wade Keller. It's 9:34 on a beautiful Sunday morning in the Twin Cities, and we got a special show coming up in about 30 minutes. Our guest for this program will be, I tried to get him on this program since this show began last August, Paul E. Dangerously will be joining us for what is sure to be controversial program, and it'll be a controversial hour or two, and we'll be taking your phone calls for Paulie Dangerously coming up at about 10:08 after news and sports. But first, we're going to take care of some business, run down this week's headlines, and take some of your phone calls. We haven't just run through some general calls in a couple weeks because we've had an influx of guests on this program. So if you want to fill up the phone lines now, we'll get to you during the first half hour, right after we run down the news. And the numbers are 989-1130, or outside the 612 area code, 1-800-445-4695. 989-1130, 1-800-445-4695. And again, we'll take your calls for Paulie Dangerously in about a half hour. So in the meantime, call about whatever you want to talk about, including some of the headlines I'll have to run down. The main one this week comes from World Championship Wrestling, where Sting, the WCW World Champion, last Sunday, a week ago tonight, was injured in a match against Big Van Vader. It was power slam coming off the top rope. Sting coming off, diving at Vader for a crossbody block. Vader turned it into a power slam. Sting landed awkwardly, and he is now out of action until WrestleWar on May 19th, 17th. Well, it's a Sunday. And Sting is out of action until WrestleWar, the pay-per-view, with two bruised ribs, a cracked rib, and a bruised spleen. It doesn't sound good. He's pretty much bedridden as we speak. And if he makes it back for WrestleWar, which he's promised everyone he will, that doesn't mean he'll necessarily be back on the road after that. At the television tapings, which will air next Saturday, Nikita Koloff was interviewed on WCW Saturday Night with Jim Ross on TBS. And Nikita at least temporarily put to rest the controversy over which side of the fence he was going to be on, whether he was going to be a on Sting's side during War Games or if he was going to turn on Sting, because he came out and he talked about how Sting was his favorite wrestler, referred to his past where he turned on his evil ways years ago against Dusty Rhodes, and then he challenged Vader for revenge for, I guess, being too rough on Sting or something like that. But Nikita will be facing Van Vader and replacing Sting at all the arena shows leading up until WrestleWar. Also, in other fronts in World Wrestling Federation, what's been called Titan Gate has continued in a small way this week. Last Monday, April 13th, Geraldo Rivera's talk show featured a not-so-serious version of talking about what's been going on. It featured former WWF referee Rita Marie Chatterton and former WWF announcer Murray Hodgson. And, of course, Chatterton claims that she was forced to have oral sex with Vince McMahon for her job. And Murray Hodgson claims that he was made a pass at by WWF vice president, who happened to be a male vice president. When he turned him down, he was terminated 2 weeks later. They told their stories, but that was mixed in with Morgana, the celebrity kissing freak, and all kinds of other strange characters, which pretty much took away from any seriousness that Rita Marie's basically rape charge against McMahon would have had. More serious and certainly more credible was 2020's art piece on ABC, their feature on steroids, which ran 2 days ago, Friday night. It interviewed the mother of former pro wrestler Ed Gantner, who, because of his steroid abuse, ended up with a kidney transplant. And when his body rejected that, he went into deep depression and committed suicide. They also interviewed superstar Billy Graham, who talked about the problems of his the problems that steroid use has caused him, and they Billy Graham talked about Hulk Hogan and how he took steroids. But the main focus of that 15-minute piece was on bodybuilding in general, looked at youth steroid use by youth, and a lot of other things. It wasn't necessarily focused on pro wrestling, but it really did. If you give credibility to that piece, it really gives a ton of credibility to the claims that steroids are not good. They're not to be accepted. Just some interesting comments in Mike Mooneyham's wrestling column in the Charleston Post-Courier last week. Steve Planamenta, spokesman for the World Wrestling Federation, talked about the Ultimate Warrior's return. And I quote, "We're all very happy to have him back," says Planamenta. "He's obviously dropped a lot of weight, and he's off whatever he may have been on. We're all very happy to have him back in healthy condition. He looks terrific. He's never looked or sounded better. He's healthy, he's rested, he's back in normal shape, and that's the whole point of our steroid testing and drug testing. It's not to hang anybody out to dry. It's to help people out." Planamenta also spoke about Hulk Hogan's status with the World Wrestling Federation. Quote, "We certainly hope and have every intention of having Hogan return in some capacity. As far as going to the New Japan promotion, somebody from the front office talked to Hulk the other day, and that's just not going to happen. It could have been just a phone call from Baba or Inoki, Japanese promoters. That got blown out of proportion. I'd be lying if I said I knew for a fact that no one had made an offer to him, but from all indications from here, he has no intention of going to Japan to work, other than on a WWF card." And speaking of the World Wrestling Federation, they returned to the Twin Cities at Target Center on May 29th, a Friday night card with Ultimate Warrior versus Sid Justice, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels as the top two matches on the event. Should also mention in World Championship Wrestling that Bill Frelick is going to be the guest co-host next Saturday's program when Nikita Koloff does his interview talking about revenge for Sting. More complete lineup now is available for the June 20th pay-per-view that will be sandwiched between WrestleWar and the Clash of Champions and the Great American Bash in July in Philadelphia. The June 20th pay-per-view headline, as I mentioned last week, was Cactus Jack versus Sting for the world title in a false count anywhere on the Gulf Coast match. Rick and Scott Steiner take on Steve Williams and Terry Gordy. Rick Rude will face Rick Steamboat in an Iron Man match, where the winner is the wrestler who scores more pinfalls in a 30-minute period than his opponent. Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton and Steve Austin take on Barry Windham, Dustin Rhodes, and Nikita Koloff in a six-man tag match. Brian Pillman will likely be defending the light heavyweight title if he keeps it until then versus Scotty Flamingo. Van Hammer faces Greg the Hammer Valentine in a battle to see who the real Hammer is. Johnny B. Badd faces J.T. Southern, and Missy Hyatt takes on Medusa in a duel in the sun to determine who is the first lady of WCW. It's a three-event competition, including a volleyball game, a tug-of-war, and a bikini pose-down. The June 16th Tag Team Tournament, the first and second round of the NWA Tag Team Tournament, will take place live on TBS on the Clash of Champions. And signed for that event, or negotiating for that event, are the Malenko Brothers, based out of Florida, a critically acclaimed team who spend most of their wrestling days in Japan. They should become quite a popular team after your fans in this country get to see them. They're kind of black and white characters, but they're excellent in the ring. Also, Chris Benoit, just a fantastic light heavyweight and a partner from Canada, will be representing Canada in this NWA title tournament. And a strong Japanese team, likely Hiroshi Hase and Kiji, the great Muta, will be representing Japan. Plus, the Steiners and Terry Gordy and Steve Williams will be representing the United States. And a team will be brought in from Mexico. We've had Jim Cornette on this program a few times, and right now, if you're wondering what he's doing, he's been involved with a group based out of Knoxville, Tennessee, called Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And I've had an opportunity to see some tapes of this program, and it really sends you back about 10 years. Their motto is wrestling the way it used to be and wrestling the way you like it. And it's targeted at Southern-based fans and in the type of Mid-Atlantic-style wrestling or the old Memphis-style wrestling that used to be down there. They've got Tim Horner, Paul Orndorff, Terry Gordy, Brian Lee, Buddy Landell, Scott Armstrong, Dirty White Boy, Jimmy Golden. They've got, you know, quite a variety. Dutch Mantel, Jim Cornette, a real variety of familiar names down there. Bob Armstrong is a commissioner. He, of course, is the father of Steve, Brad, and Scott Armstrong. But coming up, they're going to have a heavyweight title tournament. They're just going to start running full-time come this summer in the South. And they're going to have a title tournament, a Smoky Mountain heavyweight title tournament on May 22nd at the Knoxville Coliseum. First round of that tournament is Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful, taking on White Lightning, Tim Horner. Dirty White Boy takes on Dixie Dynamite, Scott Armstrong. Jimmy Golden takes on Robert Gibson. And Brian Lee faces Buddy Landell. That should be a strong tournament for an independent group. And speaking of independent groups, Pro Wrestling America, the PWA based out of Minneapolis, has events coming up, including next Sunday afternoon, a week from this afternoon, April 26th at the American Indian Center on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, just across the bridge. They start at 3 o'clock for the headline match of Punisher No. 1, defending the PWA heavyweight title against Charlie Norris. Plus, Lightning Kid, former global light heavyweight champion, faces Billy Blaze. Jerry Lynn takes on Tommy Ferrara. The Mystic takes on Tony DiNucci. And Derek Dukes, a familiar name to a lot of people from the AWA days, takes on Steve Berg. That's April 26th, next Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. at the American Indian Center in Minneapolis on Franklin Avenue. Plus, May 2nd in Somerset, Wisconsin, for all of you Wisconsin listeners, will be at the high school. Ken Patera takes on Punisher No. 2. Charlie Norris takes on Randy Gusto. Jerry Lynn takes on the Lightning Kid, which generally speaking is a must-see match. Derek Dukes takes on the Punisher, and the Mystic takes on Tommy Ferrara. That's May 2nd, Somerset, Wisconsin, at the high school gym. And May 4th, the PWA will promote an event at the Red Lake Indian Reservation in northern Minnesota. That is the news headlines. We're going to come back. We've got a full bank of open lines. So why don't you fill them now while we're away at the Sports Flashback at 989-1130 or 1-800-445-4695. I'm Wade Keller. You're listening to Pro Wrestling Focus. And don't forget, 20 minutes, Pauly Dangerously. Welcome back to Pro Wrestling Focus. I'm Wade Keller, your host until noon. It's 9:48 as we speak. We've been on since 9:30. We just ran down the headlines of the week. Highlighted, or certainly the biggest story of the week, is Sting's injury. WCW World Champion Steve Borden, known as Sting, will be out until WrestleWar with rib injuries and a bruised spleen. And when he returns then, if he still may not be back at 100% full-time action. Before we hit the phone lines, we've got one open line. You can fill that as I run down what we've got coming up later on the Fan, because it's an excellent lineup this afternoon. Coming up first at noon is Sports Weekend with Larry Fitzgerald. Always a great afternoon program, and certainly he's going to be talking about that huge North Star victory last night. That was one of the better hockey games we've seen in a long time. Mike Modano's got a jetpack strapped to his back, and Casey was certainly on. It's going to be exciting to watch the next, hopefully, three games in that series, but maybe it'll go seven. Anyways, after that comes up NBA basketball at 2 o'clock, Detroit versus Chicago. Excellent game on the Fan. And then 4:30 to 5 is a pregame show. Timberwolves Today with Tom Hanneman as the Timberwolves play their final game of the season against the Charlotte Hornets at 5 o'clock. And, of course, at 8 to 8:30 is Naismith's postgame jam with Larry Fitzgerald, who's hanging out all day. And 8:30 to 9:30, Jim Kott's Sunday Night Baseball Hour, live from the KFAN studios, a national show. And you can hear it right here on KFAN. And, of course, 9:30 to midnight is the ESPN Radio Network. But first, we got business to take care of on the Focus. Coming up in just 20 minutes is Pauly Dangerously, special guest. But let's now hit your phone calls and start with Ed from St. Louis Park. How you doing, Ed?
Hi. I have a question. Last week, Channel 9 listed in all the TV that All-Star Wrestling was on from 10 to 11 and never showed up on the air. I have two questions. One, you know what happened with the why it was lifted and what happened with it? And two is, why don't you ever have the Ganyas or somebody from the AWA on the air to explain what happened to the AWA? What happened?
Well, I've invited Greg Gagne on the air, and in the proposition, he sort of kind of brushed it off. I don't know how interested he is. If sometime he'd call the station and leave, I think he listens to this program at least sometimes from what I hear through the grapevine, and we'd love him to call up today and talk with Pauly Dangerously on the phone about the reminisce about the AWA days. As far as Vern Gagne goes, he was on the national, somewhat national sports and entertainment network last week with Mike Tenay on Wrestling Insiders. So he made a public appearance. I don't know if he'd be willing to come on this program. I'll look into that because I'm sure a lot of people would love to
hear. Did he talk about the AWA at all?
Yeah, he did, although I didn't hear the program. I just heard that he was on.
And so you don't know what he said about it. And what, do you know anything about why Channel 9 lifted that last week?
And are you referring to literally All-Star Wrestling? Or
right, they lifted it between 10 and 11 and all the TV guys and never showed up.
On Sunday or Saturday?
Sunday.
Okay, I don't know. That's a darn good question, and I wasn't even aware that it was on the TV guide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll look into that, though. I'll try to have something for you. If not, if nobody calls during this program, we'll try to have something next week.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for your call, Ed. All-Star Wrestling returning to Sunday mornings. Doubtful. Don from St. Paul.
Hey.
How you doing?
I was wondering, what's going on with the Legion of Doom? You know, they showed up in the WWF, but they haven't been wrestling, and how come they can't use the Road Warrior name?
Well, they can't use a Road Warrior name because I believe Jim Crockett had a lot of merchandise out and pretty much trademarked that name. And it also actually probably, let me correct myself, it has more to do with the fact that the WWF wanted exclusive rights to Hawk and Animal's name. And since Road Warriors was used, Hawk and Animal's name, and since Road Warriors was used so often before, the Legion of Doom was something that I believe they were able to exclusively market as their title. So if the Road Warriors ever left, they could not use the Legion of Doom name elsewhere. They'd have to go back to the Road Warriors. I believe that's my understanding of it. And as far as what their plans are, I just expect them to get back into title contention after facing the Beverly Brothers for the next month or two and, you know, take on Money Incorporated at house shows.
Yeah. And Paul Ellering's back.
I think that was one of the reasons, and this is only speculation, but the Road Warriors at least one of the two, I think, was more interested in going to Japan than the WWF, but I think that bringing their buddy Paul Ellering back into the WWF on the payroll was one of the compromises the WWF had to make to bring them back.
Yeah, he has a lot to him.
I think he does. I think especially in the character he portrayed at WrestleMania. All right, well,
enjoy your show, and thanks a lot.
Thanks, Don.
Bye.
Take one more call before our break. Marty from Minneapolis. How are you doing, Marty?
Hi. I've listened to the last four shows, and I was just wondering why you're obsessed with Titan Gate.
Obsessed with it?
Yes, you talk about it every show.
Well, I guess the reason I talk about it every show is because there's news on it every program, and I think it's a pretty serious issue.
It's a very serious issue, but you kind of, like today with the Pat Patterson comments and stuff, it's kind of a repeat in a way.
Well, I guess just because it was on the Geraldo talk show, I wanted to bring up that it did hit the mainstream media. Again, I like to at least cover national shows when Titan Gate is mentioned. But as in, you know, last week we had a 2.5 hour program and we had Jim Ross on and Chris Reese,
right.
And McCarsh didn't really talk about it much. I think I asked Mick about it and Jim Ross about it, and that would make sense. And the week before that, I don't know. I don't think we've been overdoing it. In fact, I've tried to make a conscious movement away from it as the news has died down a little bit.
Right.
If any more allegations come out, I'll be sure to cover it. But,
right.
You know, with Paulie Dangerously today, I don't think we'll be getting into that much either.
And then one other question.
Sure.
The NWA, is that going to take over the WCW, or is it going to be kind of like an offshoot from the past?
I think it's going to be more of a gimmick in that they can have some title versus title matches.
Mm-hmm.
It's more to draw upon the history of the NWA, the feeling that a lot of fans have for the NWA to try to bring that back. I'm not sure even they know exactly what direction they're going to go with it, but they've got some interesting ideas. Certainly they're going to bring back the NWA world title with a tournament in Japan that might be available on pay-per-view. I don't know. And I suspect we'll see maybe at Starrcade 92 coming up in December, we'll see a unification match between the NWA and WCW champions.
Ric Flair never got pinned for that title. Wouldn't it be his?
It technically is. However, because he didn't defend the title in 30 days, the NWA board, which
right.
was headed by Jim Herd, stripped him of the belt.
Right, right. Okay, well, I enjoy your program, and thanks for bringing it to us.
No problem. Thanks, Marty.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to a break. We've got the final break of the hour. We'll come back and take as many of your calls as we can in the final couple minutes. This is Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Focus on the Fan, 989-1130 or 1-800-445-4695 are the numbers. Welcome back to Pro Wrestling Focus. I'm your host, Wade Keller, and we're down to less than 2 minutes before we go to the top of the hour news, so let's try to get in a couple phone calls first and start with Michael from Minneapolis. How you doing, Michael?
Yeah, Wade, just a couple questions. One, what is Jeff Warner doing, and what is Scott Norton doing? Scott used to rest for AWA, and then I heard he went to Portland, then Japan. Is he going to be NWA or WWF?
He's still in Japan. I think it's more likely he'll end up in WCW than the WWF if he ends up in the United States anytime soon. Right now, he's pretty popular in Japan as a big American tough guy type wrestler, and he's improved quite a bit from his AWA days. And,
well, good to hear.
Yeah.
Mr. Warner.
And Jeff Warner's wrestling in the WWF right now. He was on Primetime Wrestling last week on the losing end of a match, but he probably has a pretty good future there.
Well, good to hear. You've got a good show.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Hit Philip from Baton Rouge real quick. Philip, what's up?
I was wondering, how long do you think Randy Savage going to keep the title?
I think he'll keep it to SummerSlam. I think Ric Flair will capture it at SummerSlam, if not sooner, but probably at least by SummerSlam.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
Okay.
See if we can slide one more in here. I don't hear any music. Dan from Grand Rapids. What's going on?
Wait, is it true that Buzz Sawyer passed away?
Yeah, Buzz Sawyer, Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer, died on February 7th, or just a couple months ago, at his home in Sacramento, California.
What was the death from?
I guess it was a drug overdose. In fact, it was. Yeah, he's had a lot of problems throughout his whole life with drugs, or throughout, most of his wrestling career with drugs, so it really slowed down what was otherwise a real talented guy with a big future in this business.
Yeah, I remember when he used to have those feuds with Tommy Rich. It was quite enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, that was probably the peak of both of their careers as far as national publicity goes. We're going to have to run. We'll be back in about 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes after news and sports with Paulie Dangerously. This is Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Focus. Welcome back to The Focus, Pro Wrestling Focus. I'm your host, Wade Keller. It's a beautiful Sunday morning in the Twin Cities. 10:11 as I speak. And we're down to the final stretch, well, the final two-hour stretch of this two-and-a-half-hour program. And it could be real long because our guest in just a moment is going to be Paul E. Dangerously, who was, according to the Pro Wrestling Torch 1991 yearbook with reader balloting, the manager of the year, ousting Sensational Sherry, Paul Bearer, Bobby Heenan, and Jim Cornette. Paul E. got 25% of the votes, followed by, as I said, Sherry, Bearer, Heenan, and Cornette. Dangerously didn't win in 1990 because he was doing announcing duties, but in 1989 he finished third behind first place Cornette, second place Heenan. And in 1988 he finished second behind Cornette. He's made an impression since day one when he entered this sport. He's been a successful color commentator on World Championship Wrestling with Jim Ross. In fact, he and Jim Ross also won the best announcing pair of the year for 1991 in the Pro Wrestling Torch yearbook. He's a controversial figure in professional wrestling, and we're excited, we think, to have him on the program. And let's welcome him now, Paul E. Dangerously. How you doing?
Well, hey, because you run down my entire list of credentials, and you don't even have me on for both hours yet. Last night, you called me up. I'm in Charleston, South Carolina at the time after a big show, and you begged me. You say, please, I need you on both hours. We had Jim Ross on last week. I said, well, hey, if you had Ross on, it was probably an entertaining show. Well, now, let's see. First you called him boring, then you called him inarticulate. He said he sounded like a hillbilly. So, you know, you sit there and you slam the Ross for 15 minutes. You beg me to come on for 2 hours. I come on your show, and I find out when you're producing, you've been on for 42 minutes already.
Does that mean you're doing good?
Well, I mean, you know, I thought I was coming out for 2 hours because you begged me and you pleaded and you whined and you cried and you've had a show on already.
Well, we had to get the news out of the way, Paul.
News schmooze. What do you want?
Well, let's talk a little bit. We're gonna first be joined by, or later we're gonna be joined by some. God, I'm just tripping over my tongue already. You've got me all nervous. Jeez. Anyways, first of all,
following in the fine tradition of Minnesota broadcasters like Eric Bischoff, I see.
Anyways, first I'd like to say I did not make those comments about Jim Ross.
Oh, please. You know, see, here you go again trying to be Mr. Nice Guy on the airways, and as soon as we get off the air, he'll go, hey, Paul, thanks a lot. That was great. God, that Ross, he really sucked last week. But that's okay. I'll play along with you.
Thank you. We're going to be hitting some phone calls later. We have one open phone line only. And 989-1130, 1-800-445-4695 are the two numbers.
Well, you can solve that now, you know.
How's that?
You just hang up on everybody that's already called in and let everybody call back again.
Yeah?
I mean, these people have held on for now 18, 20, 22 minutes. Just hang up on them.
All right. Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about your background. You were a fan of professional wrestling growing up. And we should talk a little bit about where you grew up and what was it that attracted your attention to pro wrestling initially when you were a kid. It's hard to believe you were, but you were once.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, I actually did have a childhood. You know, contrary to popular belief, I am a normal human being. You know, I inhale and I exhale, and I put my socks on before my shoes, and I wake up and I go to the bathroom, you know, and I brush my teeth, believe it or not. You know, I'm a human being, and I was a kid at one point. I do have a mother and a father, and my father sired me, and my mother had me, you know, carry me around for 9 months, you know, normal human being stuff. And I grew up in Scarsdale, New York, which is a suburb about 45 minutes from Midtown Manhattan, in Westchester County, New York. And it's about, well, I drive it in about 30, but that's my problem. And it's a suburb that really you wouldn't expect to see a lot of wrestling fans in. It's more golfing and, you know, well, let's rotate the pillow ponies today, Alice, you know. And me, I was always kind of, you know, like the bad boy of Scarsdale, you know. I mean, to the extent of being a ruffian in a community like that, you know, that was me, which doesn't go very far. It's probably like, you know, like, the wussiest kid in the Bronx could probably come over and kick my butt, but for Scarsdale, I was the bad apple, and so just to rebel against everybody, I started watching wrestling, and of course, in New York, in 1975 and 76, when I'm 10 years old, you're talking Bruno Sammartino, and you're talking Freddie Blassie and Lou Albano and the Grand Wizard and Spiros Arion and Pedro Morales. And I just found it to be an incredible display of sports, an incredible display of entertainment. I found it to be an incredible package that had everything that anybody could want. You can vent your frustrations. There are people you can like and people that you can enjoy hating. And some people you just never knew what to do with. And I just looked at it and said, my God, what a money-making opportunity. And when I was 13, I started a bulletin, which was called the Wrestling Times. And the reason I did this was quite simply to make money. And I corresponded with several people around the country, and they would send me pictures from the main events. For example, I would have somebody in Minneapolis send me, of course, at that time it was always Nick Bockwinkel versus Vern Gagne. In Florida, it would be Dusty Rhodes versus Terry Funk. In Texas, it was Fritz Von Erich against Bruiser Brody. I'm talking 1979. And I just got very, very fortunate because I put so much enthusiasm. You know, the bulletins back then were a lot different than the newsletters of today. We reported only what we saw on television. There was no talk of contracts or salary figures or, well, this guy's the new executive vice president and this decision was made behind the scenes and this producer has been ousted. It was simply what you saw on TV. It was the equivalent of a newsstand magazine today. And I caught the eye of Vince McMahon Sr. because I sent the bulletins up to the WWW, at the time, F offices, and I requested a press pass for Madison Square Garden. And what shocked me, and quite possibly everybody else, was that they gave me one. And I got to know a lot of the people who were involved in the business. And by the time I was just about 15, I was running just about everybody's fan club on the East Coast, and I'm talking Albanos and Freddie Blassies and the Grand Wizards and Ivan Putskys. And I think I was running two or three referees fan clubs as well. I mean, I don't even remember. And I got hooked up with the Newsstand magazine. So, you know, my background comes from the journalistic side of wrestling throughout my teen years. Nice short answer, huh?
Did
you fall asleep on me?
That took care of the first
14. Hello?
That took care of the first 14 questions I had written down here.
You know, I'm the one with an hour and a half sleep, and you're sitting there going.
No, that was a very good answer, Paul. Very good answer. And,
thank you. I'm on Family Feud now.
And I'll be sure to tell Jim Ross it was a good answer off there, too. Who did you cheer for when you were a kid? Did you cheer for the San Martinos, or did you cheer for his opponents? Were you a traditional fan, or did you kind of rebel even at that?
I never really cared for Bruno Sammartino, you know. To me, you know, he was just some big, dumb gorilla who would throw his weight around, and I never cared for people like that. I was always into the managers myself, you know. Lou Albano, who really invented the art of interfering for a manager, and the Grand Wizard, who in, I think, he managed in New York for probably 12 years. I don't think anybody ever laid a hand on the man because he was simply an irritant with his mouth and a mastermind with his brain. And then, of course, there's Freddie Blassie, who lives to this day 15 minutes from my parents. I mean, I was 15 minutes away from Freddie Blassie, and when I was 15 years old, he would always be the one to pick me up after school to take me to Madison Square Garden, to take me down to, you know, so that I could take pictures and do interviews and everything. You know, it was really something. You know, you leave your political science class, and there's Freddie Blassie outside chewing out your teacher going, yeah, it's only 15 minutes early, because he has to be down in the garden to shoot pictures. I mean, hey, you know, so I was always into the managers and really anybody that added to just the typical, let's take this guy down to the mat and try to work a submission out of him. I was always into the people that made the sport just a little more colorful.
How about distinctive childhood memories as a fan? What stands out before you got involved in the business as a manager? Is some of or maybe the most memorable moment for you?
Well, you know, the funny thing was I discovered wrestling in 1975. I was up late on a Saturday night, and it was midnight in New York, and I was flipping through the dials, and I came across, at the time, the big competition, the big rebel in the wrestling business was Eddie Einhorn, and he had started a promotion opposite the McMahons called the IWA, and he had Neil Mascaras and Ivan Koloff and the big cat Ernie Ladd, and I was flipping through the dials, and I came across the last 15 minutes of their program. And it was Argentina Apollo and Luis Arriba Martinez against the Love Brothers, Hartford and Reginald, and their manager, George Crybaby Cannon. And Cannon and the Love Brothers were just wreaking havoc through the IWA, and at the last minute of the program, they stole George Cannon's helmet and smacked him in. George Cannon must have weighed 480 pounds at the time, and they smacked him in the gut with it. And they went to a commercial and ended the program with George Cannon in a corner crying. And I had never seen anything like that in my life. I mean, here were four of the greatest athletes that I had ever seen. Flying all around an arena, and meanwhile, a 480-pound man was holding his belly crying. And I said, this is what life is all about. And to me, I mean, that was the first time I ever saw wrestling on television, and it just stuck out in my mind. And the very next week was the first time I ever saw the other side of the coin, which was San Martino. And I saw San Martino and superstar Billy Graham, who at the time was not only the most hated, but at the very same time, the most popular athlete in New York. And I don't mean just in wrestling. I mean superstar Billy Graham in 1975, 76, and 77 could walk down the streets of Times Square with Muhammad Ali on one side and Joe Namath on the other, and more people would flock to superstar Billy Graham than Ali and Namath combined.
I believe that too.
Oh yeah, I mean he was tremendous. He was just absolutely. He had a personality that was so magnetic, and I understand all of Billy's problems now, and I understand everything that, you know, what he's trying to get across to the public. And, yeah, one of the reasons why Billy Graham was so amazing was the way that he looked. And I understand that now that has backfired on him and how he achieved that. But to me, it wasn't the way Billy Graham looked or even the way Billy Graham wrestled or even his interviews. Billy Graham carried himself in such a way that I could never stop watching him on television. I couldn't get enough of superstar Billy Graham. When I would go to the arena to see a match, and when I first started going to the arenas right before I started my bulletin, I never really went as a fan much. By the time I was going, I already had my camera and my press pass. But I remember seeing superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes in Madison Square Garden, and it was absolutely tremendous. And Billy Graham was at that time just a phenomenon in New York City. And so really, you know, those are my two most vivid memories was the first match I ever saw on television, and just throughout the late 70s, the phenomenon in New York known as superstar Billy Graham.
Okay, Paul, we're going to go to our first break of this hour. We're going to come back, move up in years a little bit, and talk about what's going on today and hit some phone calls. This is Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Focus. We're joined by Paul E. Dangerously. Oh. to Pro Wrestling Focus. I'm your host, Wade Teller. We're joined today by Paulie Dangerously. And Paul, I want to thank you for being with us, but we've got to go because Eric Bischoff decided to come in, and of course he was the first choice to be on this program.
So. Of course. Well, obviously then it's going to be a really entertaining and informative show. We can sit here and watch Eric have his hair weaved yet again.
All right. I can see Eric's dimples quivering as we speak with that comment. All right. Enough on Eric Bischoff. First of all, if you weren't involved in professional wrestling, Paul, and we'll hit the phone lines after this question, what would you be doing today? What do you think you'd be doing in life today if pro wrestling was not there for you to create havoc in?
Well, it'd be really one of either three things. Either A, I would have followed in my dad's footsteps and become a lawyer, you know. I'm an only child, and he has his own private practice in New York City, so I could, let's see, I'm 26 now, so I'd be graduating law school in another year or so, and I would just walk into a major private practice, and so, I mean, that would be a very lucrative future. B, I would probably, if you whistle again, I might just fly to Minneapolis and crack you with a phone. B, I would most likely be doing radio in New York City, which I was on my way to doing when I got sidetracked to become a wrestling manager.
Yeah.
Or C, I'd probably follow in Jesse Ventura's footsteps and become a politician.
Like in what realm? Mayor? Governor?
I really don't know. You know, I look at the solid crop of candidates this year, and I realize that, man, I mean, if Bill Clinton and Pat Buchanan and George Bush are our choices, and Paul Tsongas are our choices, then, man, there has to be room for Paulie Dangerously out there.
You're probably right. I think you'd fit in pretty well with that, with the corrupt political state that's there. I think
I would most definitely be the most corrupt politician in many, many years.
I believe that. I really do.
I mean, bribery, blackmail. Put it to you this way. I mean, you know, a lot of people, when they grow up, they have, in New York, they have pictures of Mickey Mantle. Some have pictures of San Martino. I had three pictures. One was of me, my own hero. Another was of Superstar Graham, and the other was, of course, my ultimate hero, Richard Nixon. So, you know, you can't get any better than Tricky Dick.
Absolutely not. Let's hit the phone lines and start with Ken from South Minneapolis.
Yeah, Paulie, two quick questions. One, if you can eliminate yourself, who is the best manager today?
Oh, boy. The best managers today are not managing, unfortunately. Bobby Heenan is a role model for anybody that wants to advise a wrestler. And without a doubt, my greatest rival, Jim Cornette, could give anybody a run for his or her money. But the best manager today, I have to go with two different sides of the spectrum, okay?
Okay.
As if I were a wrestler, which I'm not, and I'm very happy that I'm not, because I can't take that kind of physical punishment. And if I could, I don't think I'd be willing to. If I were a wrestler, who better to seek the advice from than a man that held the World's Heavyweight Championship on seven different occasions? And I'm talking about Harley Race. Harley is, without question, one of the most successful competitors in the history of this sport, so you must give credit where credit's due, okay? Harley Race. On the other side of the spectrum, and when you say you eliminate me, I assume that you also mean Medusa, because Medusa, as part of the Dangerous Alliance and as director of our covert operations, is an extension of myself. I am not the only manager within our organization. We both handle different facets of the organization. So if you eliminate the Dangerous Alliance, I'd go with Sensational Sherry.
Okay, I'm very aware of what Harley Race has done since I am from Minneapolis, and he used to hold the tag team titles here. And now my second question, if Jake Roberts comes to WCW, Would you be interested in getting him in the Dangerous Alliance?
I'm interested in anybody that has a proven track record in the Dangerous Alliance. I mean, I receive resumes and applications each and every day. I'm looking, as a matter of fact, at one right now from the Diamond Stud, just for example, okay? I mean, I have it right in front of me. Jake Roberts has not applied, nor would he ever need to send in a resume. Jake Roberts is a phenomenal competitor with an incredible track record, and has achieved great success in this industry. If Jake Roberts were looking for employment within the Dangerous Alliance, I could assure you we would always be able to find room for someone like that.
Okay, thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you, Mr. Dangerously.
Well, I know that.
All right, Craig from St. Paul, how you doing?
Good. I was wondering for Paulie, if you could manage any wrestler, past or present, who would it be?
Good question.
I didn't hear the question.
If you could manage any wrestler, past or present, who would that be?
Oh, wow. Right now, I think I have them all. If you look at my own personal history and professional history, we got all the bases covered. Larry Zbysko, as documented in the new issue of the WCW magazine, I've known Larry since I was 13 years old, and I watched Larry kick San Martino's butt when I was a kid. So Larry Zbysko is a personal friend of mine. So, as far, you know, I have a lot of personal friends within the industry, but so for my own personal, for my own personal satisfaction to have a friend in the group, I have it in the Cruncher Larry Zbysko. As far as the future of wrestling goes, there is not a better prospect. There is not a better person. There is not a better man. There is not a better franchise out there today than Stunning Steve Austin, the world's television champion, the best wrestler on TV today. So Steve, who's going to be the man to carry wrestling into the year 2000, I have Steve within the organization. I have admired Arn Anderson since the day I first saw him on television. I've always said this is the consummate wrestler. And to manage Arn Anderson, and a man whom I had a bitter rivalry with in beautiful Bobby Eaton, who, and they're the best friends in the world, and to have them as a tag team, there's no fighter tag team, and they have proven that they're the world tag team champions, and there's not a better athlete on the face of this planet than Robbinsdale, Minnesota's very own United States heavyweight champion, Ravishing Rick Rude. Now, there are a lot of other people out there whom I would love to have, but I mean, right now, I really can't complain and say, well, gee, you know, we'd be complete if we had this guy, or, gee, it'd be really great if I could manage him, because, I mean, really, we have all the bases covered.
Good points, and I think there's a lot of people who would agree that the Dangerous Alliance today is superior to the Four Horsemen, who, when you look back at that group, were thought of, you know, Barry Windham, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, and probably their prime, were the greatest group of henchmen in this business, the greatest group of technical wrestlers that had ever been assembled. But Rick Rude is at the peak of his career, and I agree with your comments on Arn Anderson and Steve Austin. Steve Austin, second year in the business, finished number 8 in Wrestler of the Year. I mean, that's just not done very often.
You know, 6 weeks ago I made the comment to the New York Daily News that Steve Austin has improved more in 2 months than I've seen any athlete improve over the course of 2 years. And if I look at a tape of Steve Austin 6 weeks ago, it's like he's a totally different person, because in the past 6 weeks, he has quintupled his abilities. The man progresses so fast, it is scary. I mean, he is right now world championship material. I mean, it's obvious this guy is on such a roll. This guy is so talented. This guy is so phenomenally hot right now that in another year, what this guy can ascend to is scary.
Absolutely. Rookie of the Year last year. I mean, people saw it in him from the beginning. Trained with Chris Adams in Texas for, you know, over the whole year before he entered WCW. So, got a good future ahead of him. Let's go to another break. Come back. This is Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Focus. We're taking your phone calls. Our guest this hour and next hour, if he decides to stick around, is Manager of the Year, Paul E. Dangerously. Welcome back to Pro Wrestling Focus. I'm your host, Wade Keller, on The Fan. It's 10:41 Sunday morning. Happy Easter to everybody out there who recognizes Easter as a holiday. We're joined by Paul E. Dangerously, CEO of the World Championship Wrestling's Dangerous Alliance. He manages Rick Rude, Steve Austin, Bobby Eaton, Arn Anderson, and Larry Zbysko. And we're rolling through some phone calls and just kind of talking. So let's hit the phone lines and start with Barry from Minneapolis. How are you doing, Barry?
I'm doing fine. Hi, Barry.
Hey, Barry, can you speak up, please?
Okay, it's Bob. Holly?
Go ahead.
I'd just like to ask you...
I feel like Van Gogh. I feel like an ear's been cut off. I can't hear a word he's saying.
Okay, well, we're going to turn up volume on him for just a second. So go ahead, Barry, ask your question, then we'll have Paul. I'll restate it. Can't hear Barry, so we're going to move on and say hi to Tony from St. Paul. How are you doing, Tony? Tony.
Hey, pretty good. How are you, Wade?
I'm doing good.
Say, Paul, what do you think about possibly bringing Pat Tanaka in to work in the light heavyweight division?
What do you think of Pat Tanaka?
Well, I think a lot of Pat Tanaka. I knew Pat Tanaka back in 1987 when I was in Memphis, Tennessee. And Pat Tanaka, as a matter of fact, had I not left to go to the AWA, Pat Tanaka was going to be the next member of what was then a new organization called the Dangerous Alliance with myself, Austin Idol, and Tommy Rich. Pat Tanaka is a tremendous competitor. Pat Tanaka takes this industry, takes his job as seriously as anybody that you'll ever meet. And right along with Arn Anderson and right along with beautiful Bobby Eaton, Pat Tanaka takes great pride in what he does out in the ring. He works harder than anybody that you'll ever meet. He goes out there, he will wrestle his butt off, and he'll wrestle his opponent's butt off as well. And Pat Tanaka, if I were to have the time to concentrate on the junior heavyweight title, there is not a finer competitor out there than Patrick Tanaka to bring in the World Championship Wrestling to challenge for that belt. He is truly one of the most gifted athletes that is available out there right now. That's not in World Championship Wrestling or in the World Wrestling Federation. As far as free agents go, Pat Tanaka has to be one of the top two or three draft picks out there.
Okay, one other thing, Paul, if you would. Do you know anything about the Lightning Kid, and could you please comment? Thanks.
All right, thanks for calling, Tony.
I've seen the Lightning Kid on ESPN, and I've been very, very impressed with a lot of his maneuvers. I've been very, very impressed with the fact that he knows how to follow up on these maneuvers by then working on the body part that he has injured. A lot of people today and a lot of youngsters make this mistake. They just do a lot of pretty maneuvers that'll look good for an MTV video, and they don't follow up on it. This kid will hurt you. This kid will do something very devastating that is a very high-risk maneuver, and for example, he'll do something that'll take you down because it knocked the wind out of you because he's probably caved in the right side of your rib cage, and he'll sit there and drive his knee into your ribs and his elbow into your ribs for the next 5 minutes. He's a very intelligent wrestler. He obviously knows his skills, and he probably knows his limitations because I haven't seen any on television. And every man has limitations and flaws, but if you can hide them, then you can be more successful. He's a very talented competitor. I don't know him. I've never met him, and I haven't seen enough of him to compare him to a Pat Tanaka, but he is another one who is among the free agents out there, certainly someone whom everyone should notice, and when an opening slot occurs within any organization, the Lightning Kid is someone who should be swept up right away.
And if you were to get a hold of Lightning Kid in your organization somewhere down the line, you'd have 1990s Rookie of the Year Steve Austin and 1991's Rookie of the Year Lightning Kid. What do you think of the light heavyweight division in general? Do you think that's an important part of professional wrestling? And how do you think, as a promoter, as a promotion, that division should be portrayed? Should it be portrayed as people who lose in the heavyweight division now have a chance at a title? Or should it be portrayed more like boxing, whereas there's just simply weight division for some people move from one weight division to the other?
Well, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard was one of the best pure boxers I ever saw. Sugar Ray Leonard could mangle Marvelous Marvin Hagler, Duran, and anybody else that they threw into the ring with him. But if Sugar Ray Leonard had a horseshoe in each glove, he wouldn't go two rounds with Mike Tyson or with Evander Holyfield, simply because he was grossly outweighed. Now, Flying Brian is a great athlete and a very worthy junior heavyweight champion or light heavyweight champion. But you can't put Flying Brian in the ring with Big Van Vader or with Ravishing Rick Rude. It might be a great match, and to Pillman's credit, he'll give it his all, and he might be able to take the big man down. But it will take him 40 minutes to wear down a Big Van Vader or to injure Big Van Vader to the point where he can put him in a pinning predicament. Now, if you put Flying Brian in the ring with a guy that's closer to his weight class, then there's not, with the possible exception of a Jushin Liger or a Tom Zink, or even, as your callers have said, a Pat Tanaka or a Lightning Kid, there's not any finer athlete at that weight class. I don't think it's fair when you put a 210-pounder in the ring with Rick Rude or with Steve Austin or Arn Anderson or Bobby Eaton or with Larry Zbyszko or Vader or whomever. So I don't see it as being, well, these guys can't cut it as heavyweights. It has always been unfair because these guys have had to compete with heavyweights. So okay. Finally, someone with a semblance of a brain said, oh, wait a minute. There are some very talented guys out there who don't weigh more than 210 or 215 or 20 or 25 pounds. Hey, let's give them their own weight division like boxing does. And then somebody probably sat next to him and went, well, gee, I thought of that a long time ago. I just didn't have enough guts to say it. So finally they institute this weight class, and Jushin Liger and Flying Brian have these matches that the whole country talks about, and then the Lightning Kids on ESPN, and now some of your callers have recognized an athlete like Pat Tanaka, who didn't have great success in the WWF, quite simply because he's in there against guys like the Warlord, or guys who are 6'10" and 350 pounds, which is an unfair matchup. So I think it's a tremendous addition to wrestling. I think it should be promoted further than it has been, and I think it's great now that we are actively searching, not only within the Dangerous Alliance, but everybody else is, and World Championship Wrestling is, as a matter of fact, I know, for more light heavyweights to challenge Flying Brian. I know Scotty Flamingo is now in here looking for a title shot. And I understand that there are more Japanese wrestlers who are looking for title shots. So I think it's a very important addition to wrestling.
Chris Benoit from Canada. Stepping in.
Chris Benoit from Canada is one of the many people who are out there today, and I believe that he is, and I could be wrong, I believe he is wrestling in Japan right now.
Right.
And I know that he has a couple of tours of Europe scheduled. Chris Benoit from Canada was, when I originally came to World Championship Wrestling, which at the time was still the NWA, Chris Benoit was one of the people that I had considered, along with Brian Pillman, who came in and rejected an offer, to team with Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose to expand the stable that I was building at the time. Chris Benoit from Canada is a tremendous athlete who, when he is through honing his skills in Japan and doing his tours of Europe, when he wants employment in the United States, I don't think anybody would say to this kid, nah, we don't have any room for you.
He's a great one. His matches at Jushin Liger in Japan were really second to none.
Oh, he is. He truly is. And Benoit teams with Pillman in Canada, in Calgary. So there's a lot of history between the two of them as well.
Let's go to a final break of this hour, come back and continue rolling through phone calls. This is Wake Deadlift's Pro Wrestling Focus. Our guest this hour, Paul E. Dangerously. Welcome back to Pro Wrestling Focus. And who does write that crap anyway? Anyway, Wade Keller here, the butt of jokes on Dean McKay sometimes, and it's always a pleasure to get good publicity on your own station. And we're with Paul E. Dangerously, manager, extraordinaire manager of the year in World Championship Wrestling. We're going to run through some more phone calls, and he's going to join us for the second hour. Can you stay with us, Paul?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was supposed to be on for the entire first hour, but we're just rehashing what I've already covered because, you know, you lied to me, but that's okay. I'm used to that from you anyway.
All right. So Paul's going to be with us the second hour, and we'll get into some more issues then, but let's hit some phone calls now, starting with Tom from Minneapolis, who's been on hold quite a while. How are you doing, Tom?
Is Larry Zbysko going to lead the Dangerous Alliance?
Question from Tom. Is Larry Zbysko going to lead the Dangerous Alliance?
Well, I heard Tom. You know, Tom speaks English, and, you know,
well, sometimes
you always want to be an interpreter, Wade.
Well, sometimes it's tough for guests to
Larry Zbysko is under a long-term contract with the Dangerous Alliance, and as well, he's under a long-term personal services contract to me, Paul E. Dangerously. And Larry Zbysko dropped two straight falls last night on WCW Saturday Night to Nikita Koloff. No, I am not pleased with the result of either fall. No, I'm not pleased with the embarrassment that a member of the Dangerous Alliance lost two straight falls, especially to Nikita Koloff on national TV. Earlier today, I taped an interview that will air tonight for the Ross Report with Jim Ross on the WCW main event that airs on PBS at 5:05 out there in Minnesota, 6:05 normal human being time here on the East Coast. And the answer, quite simply, is Zbysko's in a very high-stress position. He's the cruncher. And as I've stated before, you know, people can go hire a hitman or an eliminator or an annihilator or utilize the services of a bodyguard. Well, I got one better. I got a cruncher, the cruncher, Larry Zbysko, and there's none better at it. And he's in a high-stress position because his job is to eliminate people. He's in charge of special projects. Just ask Barry Windham about that. And if Larry Zbysko doesn't take care of the job at his very first try, that's unusual. So I get upset with him. But I've known Larry since I was 13 years old, and we've been very close friends ever since. He was one of my first friends in the wrestling business. There are no problems with Larry Zbysko.
All right. I think that answers Tom's question. He's not going to be leaving the Dangerous Alliance anytime soon.
You know, all these people that try to stir things up, you know, first of all, even if there were personal problems, we're an alliance. I never said that we're friends, that we like each other. I never said that, you know, we're not an army, we're not a stable, we're not a family. We're an alliance. We're businessmen. This is a business. We're businessmen joined together to make money.
Do you have some good, Paulie, would you say that you have some good friends, or for the most part, you just strictly a business person?
Person can have a lot of friends, you know, and it's good to do business with your friends.
If somebody makes
me a lot of money, he's going to be my friend.
Whether
I like him or not, if you make me money, you're my friend.
That's what I thought. Scott from St. Paul, how are you doing, Scott?
Good, Wade. I've got two questions for Paulie. The first is on Missy Hyatt. I was just wondering if he thinks, all joking aside, that they're using her well enough. I think that she was kind of funny when she was a manager. And then the second part is, I was just wondering if he thinks all the TV exposure has helped her or really hurt wrestling.
Okay, appreciate your call, Scott. Paul, don't answer that because we're down to less than a minute. I've written both of them down. We'll cover them when we come back from the break, okay? And Scott, stay tuned for the second hour because we're going to have to go to news and mutual sports. We'll come back, talk about Missy Hyatt and TV exposure on Pro Wrestling Focus. Before we go
sometimes
to the break...
Sometimes that's the very same thing, you know.
Excuse me?
Sometimes that's the very same thing.
Sometimes it is. Let's quickly run down what's coming up after Focus. We've got Sports Weekend with Larry Fitzgerald coming up at noon.
That'll be boring.
Until 2 o'clock. From 2 until 4:30, NBA basketball, Detroit versus Chicago.
Basketball on the radio. That'll sound great.
4:30 to 5, Timberwolves Today pregame with Tom Hanneman.
Who?
The Minnesota Timberwolves then at 5 o'clock face the Charlotte Hornets in the final game of the NBA season.
For basketball.
Then 8:30, Naismith postgame jam with Larry Fitzgerald. 8:30 to 9:30, the National Jim Cott Sunday Night Baseball Hour emanating from the chair I am sitting in right now.
And 9:30,
ESPN Radio Network. Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling
Focus. Better put a towel down on that seat.
We're with Paulie Dangerous. We will be back with Paul in about 8 minutes.
8 minutes?
All right, that was fun. Thanks for joining us here on the live cast today. If you want to hear the second hour of that interview, by the way, you got to go VIP, and I'll put up a link, direct link to part two of that on my Twitter feed and also on the VIP website. You can hear the second hour of the Paul Heyman interview with a lot more fun as a VIP member at pwtorchvip.com. If you're not a VIP member, remember, for $1, you can get part two of this Paul Heyman interview and so much more for a full month for $1. Take your $9 off over at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. And enter coupon code LIVECASTSALE. That's one word, LIVECASTSALE, when you get to the bottom of the sign-up form. Also, don't forget, when you're about to do holiday shopping this weekend and get some good deals, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon instead of going directly to Amazon.com. When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, US, UK, and Canada links are on that page. Click on it and shop away as you normally would, pay the same prices. But in exchange for us mentioning Amazon here on the live cast, they give us a kickback for the shopping that you do. So some of the profit that would otherwise stay with them goes to us. It's win-win-win for everybody. pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you, everybody. Tomorrow, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant, I believe, hosting a live cast live on Thanksgiving weekend, talking about a big week in wrestling. And we hope you'll join us live then or through any popular podcast app you use or iTunes. Now it's time to go check back in and see if the Cowboys have mounted a comeback since the show started. Thanks, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off.